Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal, Season 15. Hello everyone, and welcome back to The Dark Paranormal, Season 15, Episode 3. And we have something rather special for you today. One of our most popular and indeed inquired about episodes was in Season 12, Episode 4, an episode entitled The Dark Arts. Now, we've called this episode The Dark Arts Part 2, because Kinnar, the individual who wrote the original experience, has, between then and now, travelled back to India in order to try and find some answers to the woman in the red sari that seemed to be plaguing him. Now, Kinnar has what can only be described as a very individual and unique style of writing. It's exceptionally descriptive, and I would suggest even to those who have heard the original episode that everyone should go back to Season 12, Episode 4 to listen to the original Dark Art episode before, again, listening to this one. That way, you will have the full backstory, although this can be listened to as a standalone episode. But I will honestly say, at least once a month, I get an email where somebody is asking me what was the episode where XYZ, and they're describing Kinnar's experience. I myself, although I, unbelievably, as a podcaster, don't like the sound of my own voice, went to re-listen to that episode before recording this episode, so I could get a feel for where we were going with this narrative. And I can only come to the conclusion that the way Kinnar describes his experiences is like a slow burn, because unlike many of the experiences that we do cover, there are no, maybe, jump scares. There is no way you'll be taking a pause to catch your breath. But one thing is evidently clear. The experience that Kinnar describes stays with you. And maybe that's because of what we've just discussed in regards to how he writes his experience. There's an air of authenticity that is just too hard to fake. But before we bring ourselves up to date with Kinnar's experiences, we need to, of course, thank our wonderful team over at Patreon. When you sign up to Patreon, not only do you support the show, but you also receive each and every episode that comes on the main feed before everyone else and ad-free. Not only that, but you can also gain access to the Patreon-only podcast, Dark Bites. Now, Dark Bites is out each and every week of the year, even on the downtime between seasons, meaning when we have a season break, you don't miss your paranormal fix. In each episode, we cover the shorter experiences that didn't quite make the main show simply down to length. So, there are many stories per episode, and there are well over 60 hours of back catalogue Dark Bites episodes for you to sit and binge through. But the best thing about being a Patreon is the community. We've built a wonderful community of like-minded paranormal enthusiasts over on Patreon. And we'd love to extend a special invitation just for you. Simply head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. Just like the following wonderful new team members have. Dawn, Nano, Margaret O'Halloran, Diana, Nicole Dev, Kelly Vernon, Nim, Rosie Holgate, Taylor O, Ansley Waters, Suzanne Robinson, Kim Cummins, Wendy Schiller, Nicola McCafferty, Mish, Jen Coxedge, Anthony Bauge, Shelby Montgomery, Mike, Ashton Burdine, Heather Watson, Lauren Heath, Adela Crane, Mariah Maldonado, Samantha Whitaker, Jilin Ballard, Ava Liz, Gigi Goose, Diamond Zelina, Luke Spellin, Daniel Smith and Paddy Barco. Thank you so much for supporting the show, guys. It genuinely means the world to me. And I hope you enjoy all the early ad-free releases and, of course, those Dark Bites episodes. So if you like the sound of early ad-free releases of every episode we ever put out on the main feed, as well as the entire back catalogue of Dark Bites, simply head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. But right now, it's time to lower the lights. Make yourself exceptionally comfy, and of course, most importantly, leave your disbelief at the door as we hear all about The Dark Arts, Part 2. Hi, Kevin. This is Kinnar. You shared my previous experience of heading to Chanod in India in the episode The Dark Arts. And now, I'd like to share this follow-up. What you're about to read is the experience of my recent trip to India. Within my family, spanning many generations, I found that I'm not the only person to have or had these dreams of the woman in the red sari. The woman in the red sari has appeared to quite a few of my male family members in their dreams, spanning many generations. She's manifested in several ways, following the dreams. And it's believed that she is a deceased member of my family. What we still don't know to this day is why she connects with only some of us and not all of us. There is no pattern. For example, I had the dreams and she manifested in several ways. But neither my father nor my grandfather ever had these dreams. Apparently, the last person to have her appear in their dream, prior to me, was my grandfather's brother, my great uncle. From my account, and those I managed to research about, she is evil. But to what extent or how much harm she's prepared to do is still unknown. So this is my update. It was 2023 when I shared my story with you and your listeners. I felt that by sharing the story, it would help bring some form of closure, a time for me to move on. Fortunately, or unfortunately, that did not happen. The not knowing of who that woman was eating me inside. It even got to the point where everything would come flooding back at the sight of any red garment, a t-shirt, a shirt, an actual sari, etc. A small obsession began to form. A little bit about my heritage. My ancestors come from India, from the state of Rajasthan, to be precise. Although I personally do not believe in the caste system, I am who I am, whether I believe it or not, and I cannot change it. I'm a Rajput, and come from the Hindu warrior caste. My forefathers were warriors. Warriors who served in the royal regiments from pre-Mughal times. In October of 2023, I travelled back to India, but this time to my ancestral village. I'm not going to name the village here, for respecting the privacy of those who still live there and their descendants. For many reasons, we kept my experience within a very close and closed group of family members. Despite my mother's reservations, I reached out to my extended family members, all from my dad's side, and shared my story with them. I believed that keeping it a secret was not in my best interest. There had to be more to this than just dreams, voices, cuts, etc. From these conversations, you could feel there was more information and more knowledge. But some folks were extremely reluctant to share. Some were more supportive than others. But I guess that was to be expected. But it was becoming clear that this is a secret, for one reason or another, that has not been shared extensively within the family. It had been locked away, and no one wanted that lock to be broken, and the story to come out. I was a teenager when those dreams first started, and I'm obviously now older and, so I thought, wiser. I thought I should keep the story alive, keep repeating it until someone listens to me and brings it out into the open. I do have family members who are supportive. Some of them were completely unaware, but some were familiar with the story. When talking to one family member, I was reprimanded for going to Chanod. "That place only brings evil into your soul," that was my aunt's first reaction when I told her. I reassured her that the dreams had stopped, but she was adamant that the dreams may well have stopped, but the problem will not have gone away. She then relayed a story of her father having had similar experiences. Her father was my grandfather's brother, my great uncle. She said that if I want to find out, I should go back to India, to our ancestral village. And she told me to contact her son. For this experience, I'll refer to him as Amar, to help me when I'm in India. She also told me that once I reached the village, I should seek out a certain person who would be the best person to talk to. So I arrived in India and made my way by train to the city of Udaipur, and from there I was to meet Amar, who would take me to the village. He was to be my guide, support, and contact for my duration of the stay. After 18 hours on a hot, crowded train, I reached the beautiful city of Udaipur. I was exhausted, feeling sick from the heat, and a little dehydrated. I met Amar outside the train station. I'm not sure how to describe this, but I felt a very close bond with him straight away. I'd never met him, but he was family. Yes, he shared my surname, but he had this authoritative yet reassuring personality. He doesn't live in Udaipur, but in a small town 20 miles outside. He gave me a big hug and handed me a bottle of water. He then took me to his house and I was introduced to his family. In our culture, we exist within a very extended family. Amar is my grandfather's brother's grandson, my cousin. I know I could have just said cousin from my dad's side, but it's important to note the lineage. The next day, he told me of our travel plans to get to our ancestral village. It was approximately 70 miles away. He then took out a rolled-up parchment, around 5 feet in length. When fully opened, it was close to 6 feet wide, and it was full of names and lines. It was our family tree. This tree went back 12 full generations. I was in awe. This was my heritage, my belonging. I just stared at it, and then went down the lines and saw my name. It was such a joyous feeling. like being given a great big warm hug. He quickly snapped me out of my trance and pointed to a name 10 generations back. "This is where I think the story starts," he said. "What year?" I asked. He looked at me and said, 1774. Suddenly, I thought, how does he know that? How does he know that this is where the story starts? However, being a guest, I didn't want to start challenging him, so I kept my mouth shut. Again, this was another confirmation that people in my family knew more than they were letting on. He sat me down and explained that we need to rely on stories and folklore. Not all things were written down, but stories and experiences were passed down from one generation to the next. They were also widely shared amongst villagers. I asked him if he'd heard any stories recently about the woman in the red sari. He said, "No, just yours," and smiled. The thought of exploring 250-odd years of family history had me slightly deflated. I mean, with no written records, how am I going to find answers? I was now 100% relying on someone to slip up, to blurt out the secret. I was still fatigued from my journey, so I rested with Amar and his family for 2 days, and thereafter I started my journey again. We reached the village mid-afternoon in scorching desert heat. I met up with the man my great-aunt had suggested, a village elder, and I'll call him Dadaji. Dada means grandfather in Hindi, and Ji is a gender-neutral honorific suffix. He was 92 years old, but you couldn't tell. He was agile, walked upright, and was full of life. He insisted that I should stay with him and his family. Although we don't share the same surname, according to him, and me I guess, we are family. His house was old and built in the typical Rajasthani architecture. There was a water well within the property, but it had running water also, as well as electricity. But best of all, it was air-conditioned. Amar went back home, but left the family tree with me. So, that evening in the warm desert breeze, I sat on the courtyard floor with Dadaji, and he took me through my family history and how we were related. When we talk about relations, it's not just about blood. There are so many other factors, like support given during a time of need, shared trauma, basically anything that binds people together, be it through circumstance or events. It transpired that both of our families served for the Maharaja of Udaipur, or anciently known as the Kingdom of Mewar. It was more of a history lesson, but I was transfixed. He told stories of sons of the village, those who had sacrificed their own lives to defend the kingdom against the Mughals and against the British. He also told me to be vigilant of people in the village, ones promising you answers for a fee. "As soon as they ask for money, walk away," he said. I half expected this. After all, if you come here from England, you are by default wealthy in their eyes. He also said that we need to go to my ancestral home, which is at the other end, on the outskirts of the village. I was a bit surprised to hear I had an ancestral home in India. He pointed at a name on the family tree, and said it was given after his death to the family, as reward for his bravery and devotion to the kingdom. I looked at it, and it was 10 generations back, just like Amar had suggested. The next day we went to the house that Dadaji had mentioned. It was set in the middle of a dry field. It was old, the walls crumbling, and some had even come down. "Who lives here now?" I asked. "No one," was Dadaji's reply. "No one lives here anymore. Bagwanji, my great-great-great-grandfather, sold it many years ago. But the buyer didn't stay there for very long, and it's been abandoned ever since," he explained. But he said with a great sense of authority, "It was given to your family, so it will always be yours." The door was missing, so I stepped inside. It was a dusty, musty, smelly room. There was a window that was boarded up, and the floor was made from dry dirt. There wasn't much, to be honest. Just 2 large rooms, semi-partitioned by a broken wall. I pulled out my phone to take some photos, and Dadaji stopped me. "Please," he said, "no photos." So I put my phone away, and I walked out. We walked around the village for a while, and I was greeted like a movie star. Children were following me. People were taking photos, shaking my hands. It was surreal, to say the least. Dadaji suggested we go back to his house and rest. After all, it was hot, and I was feeling drained by the intense heat. But that night, I could not sleep. I was feeling restless. And for the first time since arriving in India, I felt anxious. I was convinced that both Dadaji and Amar can give me the answer I'm looking for. I just wished they'd tell me so I could go back home and get on with my life. The room I was sleeping in had a balcony, so I stepped outside and thought a bit of fresh air will do me the world of good. It was pitch dark outside. The balcony overlooks the rear of the property, and beyond the walled fence, there's only forests and hills. With a clear sky and bright moonlight, it was beautiful, peaceful, and very, very quiet. And then I hear a very faint sound of a pail, or a heavy anklet worn by women. It has a very distinct sound, like small bells jingling. It was like someone wearing pail was walking below me in the garden. I looked down, but couldn't see anyone, and the sound stopped. As I leaned away from the edge of the balcony, it began again.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 Dream Beach vacation. Imagine jet-setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
I was scared, and I went back into my room. All the memories of my experiences in the hotel room during my last visit started coming back to me. I sat on my bed, not knowing if I should wake up Dadaji. There was a faint knock on the balcony door. I froze and turned my head slowly. And then there was a loud thud, and followed by another, and another. I got up and ran out of that room, and I did wake up Dadaji. He came into my room and checked the balcony. He then went into the garden with a torch and came back saying there was no one there. He offered to stay in my room until I fell asleep, but I declined this very kind offer. Nothing else happened that night, but I certainly didn't sleep. The next day I called Amar and told him what had took place. He said he'd come over at the weekend and we'd spend some time together. He also said that I was too engrossed in finding things out and I needed to take a step back. The next few days were quiet. Dadaji would take me around to see various people who would all welcome me and once more explain how we were related. But frustration was starting to set in. I was no closer to finding out who this woman was or is. I even contemplated whether I should just go home and let things be. Amar came over and we drove around visiting various places. I mentioned the ancestral house, and he told me how his father had tried to have the house demolished, but the villagers would not allow it. Well, this pricked my curiosity. Why did he want the house demolished? I asked. He didn't answer straight away, but after a while, he stopped the car and said, "Let's grab some tea." Now, there are numerous roadside stops in India where you can rest, grab some refreshments. So, as we sat down, Amar started telling me a story about his father, who had pled with the villagers to allow him to demolish the house. "No one stays there for long," he said. "It's cursed. And whilst you're at Dadaji's, don't go anywhere near it." Amar's tone was deadly serious. But I was now even more frustrated. "Just tell me," I wished. We finished our tea, Amar dropped me back, and he went back to his house. The next day, I asked Dadaji if we could go back to the old house. "Why?" he asked. "I just want to see it again," I said. He tried to persuade me not to, but in the end gave up and said we could. So we set off for the old house. We were walking through the village and I started hearing footsteps behind me and that jingling sound. I spun around and there was no one there. "Did you hear that?" I asked Dadaji. "Hear what?" he said. "Payal. The sound of payal behind us." He shook his head. We carried on walking and we got to the old house. And he asked me again not to take any photos. This time he also said, "Don't pick anything up from inside. In fact, don't touch anything. Just go inside, look around, and walk straight out. Don't talk, just look and walk straight out." This was a command. I agreed and walked into the house. However, this time, there was a strong fragrant smell, like freshly cut flowers. It was still as dusty, but there was this distinct fresh smell. The smell became stronger as I walked further in. I stopped. There, in front of my eyes, on the floor, was a set of pails. They were not covered in dust, though they did look old, but clean. I looked back at the doorway where Dada Ji was, and when I turned back, the pails were gone. I was now starting to freak out, and then again there was a faint sound of jingling bells, walking away from where I stood. I couldn't take my gaze away, so I walked out backwards. I didn't share any of this with Dada Ji, and instead I asked him to take me back home. He did, and I asked Amar to come pick me up at his earliest convenience. He said he would pick me up as soon as possible. I was now scared and deeply regretting my decision to come. Sure, I'd learnt a lot about my family history, but I did not want to relive my experiences in Chanod and Vardora. But strangely enough, I did want to go back to that house. The pull was strong. It was like being a smoker and giving up. The urges, the craving. I couldn't think about anything but that house. I started, in my head, planning to rebuild the walls, replaster, refloor each room, and live there. The more I resisted, the stronger these urges became for me to go and live there. Next thing, I'm searching for builders in the area, checking the cost of bricks and plaster, deciding on wall colours, the type of front door I would have. The rational side of me knew this was just plain crazy. I would say to myself, no, the house needs demolishing. But after a few hours, I'd start planning all over again. I started feeling weird, like I was not me. I don't know if that makes any sense. Every now and then, in my conversations with Dada Ji, I would talk in an old Rajasthani dialect. Not fluently, but drop the odd sentence into a conversation. He'd look at me with surprise. "You speak the old language," he'd say. "How wonderful. I'm so proud of you." But I had no idea what I was saying. Yet I was talking in a dialect not heard in that village for many, many years. Then things began to escalate. I started visiting a nearby town and asked for shops that sold swords and bows and arrows. I distinctly remember asking for a certain type of sword, the exact curve, handle, and sheath. This was insane. It felt like there were two versions of me, and the real me was sat on one side, observing the other me shopping for swords, talking about renovating the old house. And that sound of pail was now becoming ever-present. I would hear them in every room, on the street, everywhere. When sleeping, I could feel someone sleeping next to me. When I'm walking, I can feel someone walking behind me. The weird thing is, I wasn't frightened. I even welcomed it. It was becoming normal, a part of my everyday life. Doing up that old house was now becoming an obsession. I would go there every day, on my own. I would sit there, visualizing where my bed would be, where the kitchen would start, etc. I was becoming more and more withdrawn, and more obsessed with this house. Dada Ji was clearly worried, and he asked Amar to come right away. He did, and I shared my plan with him. He just stared at me and said, "We need to leave this place right now." "No way," I shouted. "This is my village, and that old house is my house." Amar did not argue. He said he'd stay the night with me at Dadaji's, and we can decide what to do the next day. That night, I was in my bed, and I started thinking about the house. I was obsessed with it. So much so that I got dressed and left Dadaji's in the middle of the night and started walking towards the house. I got to the old house. My house. I went inside. "This is my house," I said to myself. "I can do whatever I like. I can touch the walls, pick things up, kick the dirt, shout, sing, do whatever I want." So I did. I walked inside, and I started talking, pretending there was another person in the house with me. As I was talking, I saw a glow in the corner of the second room. It slowly started getting brighter, and then disappeared. What happened next shook me to my senses. Suddenly, someone or something hit me on my back, and immediately I felt my back being rubbed in slow, smooth strokes. Then, right across my right cheek, I was slapped, and then my left cheek. And then once more, I felt someone gently rubbing my face, as if trying to ease the pain from the slaps. I couldn't move or scream, and then I felt this heavy force pulling me towards where that glow had been, and it was painful, a burning sensation, like someone had put hooks in my chest and was pulling me towards them. And then that fragrant smell returned, and the sound of the jingling bells. The smell got stronger, and it felt like someone was walking around me. The sound of bells jingling all around me, moving in a quick circle. I was then pushed with such force that I must have fallen back a good few feet. I was petrified, but I had this overwhelming feeling of going back to the second room. I got up on my feet and started to walk towards the second room, but something made me stop. It felt like someone had their arm around me from behind and was pulling me back. I fell to the ground and stayed there for a few moments. My head was bowed, and try as I might, I could not lift it. After a few moments, it was calm. I looked up, and there was nothing. Just broken walls, debris, and dirt. I got up and staggered out of that house. I felt calm, a bit dazed, but drained. I had no energy to walk for more than a few feet unaided. I started making my way back to Dadaji's. As I approached his house, I saw Amar running towards me. At first, he was angry, but then he put his arm around me and took me back. I got to my bed and I fell asleep. When I woke up, Dadaji was sitting on a chair in my room. He got up and stroked my head in a kind, paternal way. "You need to go back home," he said. "I can't let anything happen to you. I'm responsible whilst you're in my house, and now it's time for you to go back." I didn't argue with him. "He's right," I thought. "This is not what I want. This is not what I came for." I decided I'd pack my bags and go back with Amar. I put my suitcase on the bed, and as I started packing, my foot hit something under the bed, and it made a jingling sound. I bent down, looked under the bed, and there was a set of payal. I picked them up and took them to Dadaji and Amar, who were sitting outside. I didn't say anything, I just put my hand out, holding the payals. Dadaji stared at me, stared at them, then back at me, and said, "We'll take them back." "Back where?" I asked. "And whose are they?" He didn't say anything. Amar was equally shocked. Dadaji asked us both to come inside the house. He asked Amar to bring the family tree, which he did. He rolled it out on the floor, and we both stared at Dadaji. There was a silence, and then he said, "This is something I promised your grandfather," looking at Amar, "that I will never talk about. I promised him, but you both need to know the truth, because I feel that you," looking at me now, "will keep looking for answers. And in the end, it will destroy you and your family." He pointed at the name that both he and Amar had pointed out before. And so the story began. Or should I say, my story ended. Some might believe this and many others won't. But the story goes like this. My great times eight grandfather was a soldier in the Maharaja's army. At the age of 47, he lost his wife, my great times eight grandmother. They had four children, and he remarried to a young woman. We don't know the age. Soon after getting married, my great times eight grandfather was killed when his troops were ambushed by bandits. This was circa 1774, and the practice of sati was common in India. For those who are not aware of what a sati is, here's a quick description. Sati is an ancient Hindi tradition where a widow would throw herself on her husband's funeral pyre and slowly burn to death. Thankfully, it's outlawed in India. Sati symbolized closure to a marriage. Initially, it was a voluntary act in which a woman followed her husband to the afterlife. It was considered the greatest form of devotion of a wife towards her dead husband. The sati would not wear the traditional widow attire, a white sari. Instead, she would wear her wedding clothes and all her jewellery. The colour of the sari would always be red, or a deep pink in those times. Dadaji relayed the story of this young girl who had just become a widow, and she volunteered to become a sati. I cannot vouch if this was a voluntary act, or whether she was forced by my ancestors, or her family, or even both. But this poor young woman did, in her complete wedding attire, lay on the burning funeral pyre of her husband. Thank you for reading, Kinnar. Well, Kinnar, thank you so much for A, providing us with that amazing update, and B, for giving us this edition of The Dark Paranormal. So now we know who this woman in the red sari is and why she evidently is clearly angry. I'm tending to go with not voluntary when I think about this sati that you mention. Surely if it was voluntary, there would be no anger within the individual. But this does sound like, and indeed your family claim it to be, one evil spirit. Hopefully this is the last you will have to do with the entire topic, But if that changes, please, as ever, do drop us a line. And that goes for anyone who has their own true paranormal experience. Please send it on over, irrelevant of size, to contact@thedarkparanormal.com. For our Patreons, I'll speak to you again on Sunday for another episode of Dark Bites, and for everyone else, I'll see you through the week for a minisode. Until then, remember, when you're talking about the paranormal, always try and leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll see you next time, right here on The Dark Paranormal.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.